Hello, it's Thursday the 4th of August and welcome to another edition of Korea 24. I'm your host, Hwang Jang-woo. President Yoon Suk-yeol has spoken with U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the phone during her visit to Seoul. He described the visit as a sign of deterrence against North Korea. We'll have more in our news briefing shortly. President Yoon's approval ratings have fallen below the 30% mark in recent polls. We take a look at the issues weighing down his presidency in Korean Politics Digest later. And then coming up on Explore Korea, we discover the beautiful sights and culinary treats of Danyang County. We have all that and more coming up on today's Korea 24. President Yoon Suk-yeol spoke with the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on the phone today, Thursday, while she is visiting Seoul. This comes after the decision not to meet her in person during his summer vacation this week. For more on the call and Pelosi's visit, our KBS World Radio news editor, Gu Hee-jin, joins us in the studio now. Hee-jin, hello.
Hello, Jang-woo.
So Yoon talked with Pelosi and members of the U.S. delegation, and they held a 40-minute phone conference to discuss diplomacy, defense, and technological cooperation. However, they did not bring up the issue of Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, which has prompted fierce protest from Beijing. So what more do we know about what was discussed?
Well, according to a senior presidential aide, Yoon pledged to cooperate closely with the U.S. Congress to set up a global comprehensive strategic alliance as agreed upon during his summit with U.S. President Joe Biden in May. Yoon also noted the significance of Pelosi's visit to the joint security area on the inter-Korean border, saying it will be an indication of the allies' strong deterrent capabilities against North Korea. Pelosi said that the South Korea-U.S. alliance is significant in many ways, but that above all, it should be defended on ethical grounds. The speaker said the two nations have an obligation to secure and cherish peace and prosperity, which was only made possible through the sacrifice of countless people. She suggested that the two countries jointly build a free and open Indo-Pacific order. Early on Thursday, the House Speaker held an hour-long discussion with her South Korean counterpart Kim Jin-pyo, Speaker at the National Assembly, and agreed to enhance cooperation on approaches to North Korea and other issues of mutual concern.
And as we mentioned, China has strongly protested Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, which it considers a part of its territory as per its One China policy. And South Korean airline operators have felt the backlash as well as China flexes its military might in live-fire military drills. Can you update us on that situation?
Well, according to the Transport Ministry, Beijing on Wednesday notified that it will hold live-fire exercises near Taiwan in protest of Pelosi's visit to the self-governing island. The drills will likely affect some 100 flights operated by South Korean Airlines from Thursday to Sunday. Seoul said Beijing alerted aircraft and vessels to stay away from the airspace and waters near Taiwan during this period. The ministry has shared the relevant information with domestic airlines on Wednesday and issued a safety alert. Asiana Airlines moved up its Thursday's flight to Taiwan by 3 hours to 7 a.m. The return flight to Incheon was also moved up to 11 a.m. The airline's Friday flights to the island are cancelled and decisions on Saturday and Sunday flights will be made the preceding day.
Now, in other international disputes, the Japanese government sent a Korean victim of wartime forced labour 99 yen, which is less than a dollar, as her pension, according to a KBS report. This, of course, is contrary to ongoing diplomatic efforts to improve bilateral ties frayed by colonial-era issues and Tokyo's retaliatory trade restrictions. Can you give us more details on this perturbing news?
Well, according to a KBS report on Wednesday, Jeong Shin-young, one of the victims who was forced into labor for 18 months from 1944 when she was just 15 years old, filed a damages suit against Japanese firm Mitsubishi Heavy Industries last year, 75 years after Korea's liberation. In order to substantiate her legal claim, Jeong requested from the Japanese government a record of her welfare pension registration, as well as a remittance of her pension withdrawal allowance. Last month, the Japan Pension Service under the Welfare Ministry deposited 931 won into Jeong's account, which is around 99 yen. The amount is similar to the 99 yen and 199 yen sent to legal representatives of other victims in 2009 and in 2015 in the form of pension withdrawals. The payment to Jeong was made some 10 days before Foreign Minister Park Jin visited Japan last month to seek a resolution to the forced labor issue.
In other diplomatic news, Foreign Minister Park Jin pledged to boost strategic dialogue with Southeast Asian countries to resolve regional tasks and challenges. Can you tell us more on his remarks?
At a meeting with foreign ministers from member states of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, in Phnom Penh on a Thursday, Park said the partnership between South Korea and the bloc should expand beyond economic cooperation to focus on reinforcing strategic ties. The minister said the ASEAN region is at the core of Seoul's initiative as a global leader to actively contribute towards achieving freedom, peace and prosperity in the region and abroad. Park expressed his commitment to further enhance cooperation with the region, highlighting ASEAN's increasing role amid an accelerating shift towards the Indo-Pacific in international economy and geopolitics.
Okay, let's turn now to the latest spike in COVID-19 infections here in Korea. Daily cases remained over 100,000 for a third day, and the number of critically ill patients exceeded 300 for the first time in 2.5 months. Can you update us on the latest?
Well, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency reported 107,894 infections, bringing the cumulative tally to some 20,160,000. The daily figure increased 1.2 times from a week ago and 1.5 times from 2 weeks ago, indicating a slowdown in the pace of acceleration. The number of critically ill patients rose by 26 from the previous day to 310, surpassing 300 for the first time in 78 days. The figure increased 1.58 times from a week ago and nearly tripled from 2 weeks ago. In spite of the spike, schools and kindergartens nationwide will continue with in-class learning during the upcoming fall semester, but will be subjected to antiviral inspections. Health authorities will also provide relevant supplies before students return to school after their summer break.
And finally, South Korea's first lunar orbiter will take off on Friday, Korea time, after a two-day delay. Can you give us the details?
Well, the Ministry of Science and ICT said on Thursday that Korea Pathfinder Lunar Orbiter, better known as Tanuri, will lift off on Friday from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida. Tanuri, developed by the Korea Aerospace Research Institute, or KARI, will be carried by a Falcon 9 rocket launched by U.S. aerospace company SpaceX, which is headed by business magnate Elon Musk. The space vehicle arrived at the space station in Florida on July 7th for preparations ahead of the launch. Tanuri will be moved to the launch pad on Thursday morning and erected at around 3 p.m. Korea time. Now, if all goes according to plan, Tanuri will enter lunar orbit on December 16th and settle into an orbital altitude of 100 kilometers on December 31st.
Okay, we'll leave it there for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
Thank you.
Less than 3 months into President Yoon Suk-yeol's term, his approval ratings have plummeted below 30%, according to recent polls. The short time in office has been plagued with controversies and missteps. One recent example has been the decision to invalidate the results of a public petition platform that the administration has created after suspicions that the votes had been rigged by outside forces. To discuss these issues today for Korean Politics Digest, we have our regular panel of guests joining us. First, we have affiliate Professor Kim Byung-ju from the Hanguk University of Foreign Studies, who's with us here in the studio today. Professor Kim, hello.
Hi, wonderful to be in the studio this time.
Yes, it's great to have you with us. And we also have standing by on the line, Law Professor Cho Hee-kyung from Hongik University. Professor Cho, welcome to the show as well.
Hello. I wish I could be in the studio. I hope next time.
Sure, we will have a seat ready for you as always. Let's start with that petition platform first today. In late June, the presidential office created a platform called 국민대안 in Korean, where citizens can submit proposals and suggestions to the government. Then people can vote to support those proposals, and the most popular three were then meant to be reviewed by relevant ministries as a possible addition to their policy agenda. So this was essentially a replacement of the presidential petition system that the Moon administration had issued. The top office, however, said on Tuesday that it had detected, quote-unquote, abuse, that there had been abnormal access to the site, including through foreign IP addresses, and this seemed to have influenced the top proposal's vote held over 10 days from July 21st. Therefore, the results were invalidated. Professor Cho, let me start with you. How do you view what happened with this new petition platform?
What a debacle, seriously. I actually visited the website and checked out the petition items before they deleted everything. And my first impression was such an amateurish job, you know, and a first-year undergrad computer science student could have done a better job at creating the site. So they tried to create a new site after having abolished the online petition system under Moon administration, which was called People's Petitions, and they ran it under, I think, a URL of epetition.go.kr, and this is now called something like epeople.go.kr, but nothing looks professional. It doesn't even sort of have that feel of kind of official looking website, and the way you voted was just pressing on this little thumbs up logo, and that was it. There was nowhere to actually express your opinion. There was nowhere for you to say that you actually disagree with the petition item. And I was a little bit surprised that they cited the reason for essentially discarding the result of the petition after having advertised it and marketed it so much, saying that there was an abuse in the access, including foreign IP addresses. And that is a little bit odd because it could be, you know, Korean citizens who might be residing abroad who also have an opinion about these issues who've accessed the site to vote. But certainly I could tell when I logged on to the site when it was still valid that there were security issues because they touted the fact that you had to register with your real name to be able to vote on the site as a differentiating measure. But there was no real kind of process to filter out any kind of double voting, I think. And given that they were using real name system and given that we have this, you know, resident number system here in Korea that where everybody has a unique, you know, number, it would be so easy to filter out those kind of, you know, double voting and things like that. So it just shows once again how incredibly unprepared, kind of, you know, slapdash job that they were doing. And it really seems to represent the kind of approach that they have to pretty much everything, including this, you know, sudden proposal of lowering the school age to 5 years and so forth. So it was just a real disappointment.
Okay, so debacle, amateurish, unprepared were some of the words used there by Professor Zhu. Professor Kim, what do you make of the situation?
I want to make 2 points. Number one is points about fact, and then number two is my view. About the first one, about facts, I don't want to directly dispute what Professor Cho said. These days, I'm afraid of Professor Cho Hee-kyung and getting into direct rebuttal of what she says and stuff like that. But by 5:30 p.m. today, I entered the system. And what I found was they changed to real name system. And so you have to log in with real name. I didn't try to log in with my real name, but they already have a real name login systems. Looks like it's all set up. So I think that's positive for sure. And then the top 10, the ideas were found. There was a top 10 segment. And in that, what I found was the idea to strengthen punishing those owners of the dogs that, you know, violates, gets into violent acts and so on, hurting people and so on. And then also a petition for offering the visa, work visa, for foreign nannies. And there are 10 of them. I cannot go over all of them, but that includes the, reopening of the big size marts, supermarkets and so on, without their regular shutdown every 3-4 weeks and so on, that included. And there are several, they're all really good ideas. I liked what I saw, top 10 items. So what I found in terms of facts was that the system has quickly moved to the real name system, which I think is really important. And I like that they did it. And also the top 10 ideas that I saw were all really nice ones. I liked, and I don't know how they're going to be implemented and all that. I'm lacking details on that side. So the facts that I saw was different at the 5:30, as of 5:30. My view, second point, my view about the Moon government's previous Moon government's petition system. I had really a lot of mixed feelings about it. I knew there was kind of like a global trend, even during the Obama administration in the United States, they had similar systems for White House, and this is something we cannot reject or criticize or counter directly. Looks like this is what people want these days. They're a direct voice. But for a while, I thought, for a long time, I was thinking this is unnecessary. The outcome we're going to get out of all this is going to be, in total, in on balance, is going to be negative. That's what I've been thinking all along. But now, recently, I've changed my mind. Again, because this is what people want, we should find a way to work it out and then sort it out and then address all the shortcomings and so on. So in that sense, yes, I do agree with Professor Cho with her observation that what has happened so far has been very amateurish and they should have done a better job and so on. But looking forward, I think things are heading to be the right direction. Looking at these ideas that are listed in the top 10 list and then the quick move to the real name system. Of course, you have to have use your real name. Or you don't have to publicize your name, but the system managers should know who you are exactly. So that kind of quick move and so on, I think it's a positive. So many mistakes done so far, but going forward, I'm looking with optimism.
Well, I think I need to point out a couple of misunderstandings possibly on Professor Kim's part.
Sure. This is why I'm afraid.
very briefly.
On this e-people, the new 국민제안 site under Yoon administration, you always had to log on with your real name. There was no question about that. What the difference is between the e-petition and the Moon administration system was that what was posted on the website could have been under a pseudonym or a different name. But on this new people's suggestion website, your name gets displayed, although one of the syllables of your name will be masked with an asterisk. So that's really the only difference. You still have to log on from the very beginning with real name. So they didn't actually change it to logging on with real name as of 5:30 today. That's not the case. But my point is, if they required to log on with your real name, they could have also used the same mechanism to make sure that you cannot double vote. because it's very easy to filter out, because you also have to give your registration number. And they didn't do that. That's just that very simple step.
Right.
And so my point is the setup was just so full of holes.
Right. And people have also pointed out that the number of votes that each petition has had in the top 10 is around 56,000 for all of them. And the fact that all the petitions have a very similar number of votes suggests that there was perhaps some sort of abuse, as the presidential office has called it.
That's the second point, which is that Professor Kim said they're all very nice ideas. And certainly they're all very nice ideas, but that's it. You know, they're literally one sentence ideas. There's no, niceties or no real kind of sort of in-depth analysis or, not that I'm expecting in-depth analysis, but there should be some room for expression of different details and also voicing of oppositions, et cetera, et cetera. And that
I think Professor Cho wins this time, like many times, I think my point still holds.
Okay, well, this controversial platform is just one of many issues that has been taking a toll on President Yoon's approval ratings, which dropped below 30% in recent polls. For one, according to a Career Society Opinion Institute survey conducted on 1,003 voters nationwide last Friday and Saturday, 28.9% said Yoon was doing well on state affairs, down 3.3 percentage points from a week earlier. Those who gave a negative assessment rose 4 percentage points from the previous week to 68.5%. This survey commissioned by TBS had a confidence level of 95% with a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1 percentage points. Professor Kim, how significant would you say these numbers are? How much of a warning light is it for the Yoon administration?
Yeah, I was hoping to say things after Professor Cho says something about this for this time, but I'll go. Okay, I have offered many different criticisms against President Yoon with regard to approval rating so far several times in the previous show. And now today I want to offer positive observations. That is, as I thought about preparing this issue today, I was thinking maybe this is a good thing. This is a blessing in disguise because this low rating. I mean, one of the things that I was originally really afraid of when Yoon government started was the redux, repetition of what we saw under Lee Myung-bak government when it came. Lee Myung-bak government started with huge support level. Of course, his competitor, Jeong Dong-yeong, was such a weak candidate. So Lee Myung-bak won lots of votes, big vote, almost record setting. And he came in with, my favorite word, hubris. And he just wanted to really undo 10 years of, quote-unquote, his quote saying 10 years of progressive government mistakes.
Right.
And but he quickly ran into a huge popular opposition against mad cow disease and all these things, and he was on his knees very quickly. I didn't want to see that happen again. And this time, I guess this is kind of like a vaccine in a way. The approval rating plummeted so quickly. It's been less than 100 days.
Less than 3 months.
Right. So I think President Yoon is humble now, whether he likes it or not. He's showing gestures to embrace people, the weaker party, weaker side of the society. He's showing those gestures now. And so I think this is actually a blessing in disguise. And more than anything, conservative president has to be compassionate and has showed the gesture of embracing those people on the lower side of the income level and so on. I mean, he has shown these undesirable gestures the way I saw it initially. Big business, we were going to go with the market principles, let's free the enterprises and so on. That really worried me a lot. But now he's quickly changing his posture and focus as a result of these terribly low ratings. So I think in a way it's a blessing in disguise.
Perhaps we can sum it up as the only way is up, I guess. Professor Cho, what are your thoughts?
You know, I would actually tend to agree with Professor Kim, but I would just make the proviso that it would only be a blessing in disguise. They can only turn this threat into an opportunity if they realize that they have made missteps, acknowledge what they have done wrong, and be prepared to change and take the opportunity to change. One thing that's really standing on their side is the fact that there are so many easy, low-hanging fruit that they can pick to bring up their rating very quickly. I mean, they're not their rating, but the poll numbers, because the causes are very obvious. They're very clear. If you track the polls that have been conducted since his inauguration, there are, I think, three inflection points where you've seen real dips in the numbers, and they all have to do with personnel appointments. They all have to do with perceived inappropriate civilian involvement in the government, potentially untoward influence by the partner of the First Lady, possibly, and also the seeming neglect by the president of the main issue that is concerning the public, which is the economy. Mm. And so if they pick up on those cues and just change a few basic things, their approval rating will shoot up almost immediately. So I think it's really up to the president now to acknowledge that, okay, I haven't necessarily done all the right things, but I'm willing to change, I'm willing to learn.
Right.
Or whether he's going to maintain his arrogant attitude and just say, well, nobody in the previous administration has made the kind of, you know, excellent appointments that I have made.
Right.
Because that's going to just, you know...
Right, to turn things around, essentially, he has to be willing to change. Professor Kim, do you think he will be able to turn things around, especially as the numbers have dropped so far so quickly?
I have to wait and see on that one, because even though I offer some optimistic observation here, in my gut feeling, so far at least, it's kind of more like a knee-jerk reaction rather than wholehearted turning of the direction, committed to turning of the direction. So I don't have the evidence to see that. So we need more time to make any judgment on that.
And there continue to be controversies we can look to today. There is much debate over whether President Yoon should have met with U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi instead of just having a phone call. Criticism about whether there should have been a delegation from the administration to welcome her to Korea. Professor Kim, do you think this situation could affect his numbers for next week as well? How do you think the public will view this situation?
To be blunt about it, I don't think public really care about it. You know, U.S. Speaker of the U.S. House, I don't think public deeply cares about it. But the thing is, it shows once again the problem with the system here in Korea. My own view is that it's not necessarily the mistake of the presidential office or executive branch. I think it was a mistake made by the National Assembly. I'd like to suspect or guess that division of labor was made earlier on. Executive government saying this is a sensitive issue. Pelosi's counterpart is the Speaker of National Assembly. So National Assembly, you take care of it. And then National Assembly got it under their control. And then Democratic Party controlled National Assembly did what he has been doing a lot in the past, showing insensitivity to international affairs and diplomacy. Remember what happened when Zelensky was giving speech, online speech in National Assembly? Comparing to what happened in Japan, it was such a shame. The National Assembly is not good at handling this diplomacy and protocol issues, and I think they made a big mistake this time. Not having anyone at the airport is a gross mistake, and there is no excuse about it. And I'd like to just... guess is the right word. I like to guess it's the mistake made by the National Assembly in terms of not thinking about it. I mean, they're saying they talked to the U.S. Embassy beforehand, but of course, when you say, well, we're not going to send anyone at the airport, is that okay? And what will U.S. Embassy say? Yeah, I guess it's okay. But of course, they have every right to express certain second feelings behind it. So that's my guess in terms of what happened, and it was a clear mistake.
Professor Zhu, do you think there'll be any impact on the public opinion of the Yoon administration? There is a lot of media noise about this at the moment.
Yes, I think there will be, because not on the question of whether Yoon should have met Pelosi in person or whether phone call was sufficient. But the debacle that had already happened over what he was actually going to do, so the presidential office initially said, oh, yes, they're arranging to meet, they're just scheduling the appointment time, whatever. And then they said, no, we are not meeting. And so there was this kind of, to-ing and fro-ing, and the presidential office, again, seeming really amateurish and unprofessional and not knowing, even within themselves, among themselves, what was actually going on. And so it just adds to the perception that the presidential office, including the president, don't really seem to know what they are doing. And so it, I think, adds to the anxiety of the people. This is a very newbie politician president who has spent his entire life being a prosecutor. Does he actually know the business of state craftsmanship? And so it's inevitably going to affect the perception that people have of him.
We'll wrap it up there. We've been speaking to Affiliate Professor Kim Byung-ju from the Hangul University of Foreign Studies and Law Professor Cho Hee-kyung from Hong Kong University. Thank you both for your time, as always.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 11.66 points, or 0.47% on Thursday, closing the day at 2,473.11. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 9.80 points, or 1.20%, to close at 825.16. On the foreign exchange, the local currency strengthened 0.21 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,310.11. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
It's time now to take a look at some of the other news stories that have been trending online. It is our daily segment, Korea Trending. And for that, we have joining us in the studio today, Jenny Ha. Jenny, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Tao.
Okay, let's head straight into our stories once again today. Jenny, what do you have for us first?
The South Korean aerobatic team Black Eagles put on a display over the pyramids of Egypt earlier this week, becoming the first foreign air force in the African country's history to do so. The elite special flight team, consisting of 8 domestically made supersonic T-50B jets, boasted a high level of teamwork as they soared over the historic structures during their 25-minute aerobatics show on Wednesday.
Okay, so the Black Eagles are making history then, it seems. Can you tell us more about their performance?
Yes, the Black Eagles showed off their maneuvers drawing the Taeguk circle of the national flag over the pyramids with smoke and painting the sky red, blue, and white. And they also flew in formation with 9 silver stars of the Egyptian Air Force. And this is the first time that a foreign air force has been selected to fly in the area above the pyramids, as it is very difficult to obtain permission due to the historical value of the 4,500-year-old structure.
Yes, it must have been quite the spectacle. And the fact that this was the first time that any foreign aerobatic team has performed above the pyramids like this must have been quite meaningful as well.
Mm-hmm. So Egypt's choice of South Korea as its foreign air show partner can be interpreted as acknowledging the Black Eagle pilot's skills and the superiority of the T-50B aircraft. And according to reports, the show also highlights Cairo's wish to reinforce cooperation in the defense industry with South Korea. And this is just one stop on the Black Eagles world tour following performances at England's Southport, Royal International Air Tattoo, and Farnborough Air Shows last month. And they will be promoting the excellence of their aircraft in other countries, including Vietnam and the Philippines, before returning home.
Yes, I actually saw them myself in the UK a few years ago, and they really do put on an incredible show. Mm-hmm. So yes, we can proudly say they are the pride of the nation. Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
The police have caught the culprit of an accident involving fallen cargo from a truck flying into the windshield of another car on a highway using a sticker as a clue. The Korean National Police Agency put up a post on its Facebook page on Wednesday explaining how they were able to find a truck despite the area having no surveillance cameras, along with several photos of the accident.
Wow, so can you tell us more about what exactly happened? You said the fallen cargo flew into the windshield of another car.
Yes, the windshield of the victim's car was penetrated by a 50 by 20 centimeter piece of aluminum panel that had fallen from a truck on the Chungbu Expressway. And according to the police, the fallen metal piece, which is typically used as construction material, bounced off the road into the victim's windshield when another car drove past it. And as the area had no surveillance cameras, the only clue was a sticker on the aluminum panel left at the scene, which had some letters written on it. And the police were able to identify a company related to the case after a nationwide search and eventually found the suspect.
Right. I believe no one was hurt, thankfully, but it very easily could have been a different story. What kind of punishments are in place for incidents like this where cargo is not secured properly?
So for cargo transport operators, they must take necessary safety measures such as putting on covers and securing the cargo to prevent it from falling off. And failure to comply with this results in a fine of up to 10 million won or $7,000. And any person who causes injury or death could face a prison sentence of up to 5 years or a fine not exceeding 20 million won, which is around $15,000.
Well, thankfully, there was a sticker on that piece of metal this time and that the police were able to find the truck driver responsible. Mm-hmm. But yes, it must have been absolutely terrifying for that other car.
Yes.
Let's move on to our final trending story. What else do you have for us today?
The blockbuster disaster movie Emergency Declaration saw a successful first day at the South Korean box office, beating out Hansan Rising Dragon for the top spot. According to the Korean box office information system on Thursday, Emergency Declaration gathered almost 337,000 in attendance on the day of its release on Wednesday.
Okay, so the battle of the local summer blockbusters is in full swing. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about the number one film then, Emergency Declaration.
The air disaster film received attention early on with its big name stars like Song Kang-woo, Lee Byung-hun, Jeon Do-yeon, and Kim Nam-gil. And the story follows a veteran detective who tries to prevent a terrorist attack on a South Korean flight bound for Hawaii, which also has his wife on board. And this is the first release in 5 years by director Han Jae-rim, who is also known for his hit movies The Face Reader in 2013 and The King in 2017.
Yes, and the film's early success is more good news for the industry this year. After all the difficulties during the pandemic, right? So far, it's turning out to be a good year for Korean films.
Yes, so the Emergency Declaration is the third Korean film this year to record over 200,000 in pre-orders following the crime action movie The Roundup and Hansan Rising Dragon, which has seen more than 3 million moviegoers in just 8 days since its release in theaters. And the film's actors will be continuing their promotional events in various theaters around Seoul, including Yeongdeungpo and Yongsan.
We'll be reviewing both Emergency Declaration and Hansan tomorrow for Movie Spotlight. So if our listeners want to know what our film critics thought of the films, join us for that tomorrow. In the meantime, that's where we leave it for Career Trending. Thank you for those stories, Jenny, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Next up, it's our weekly segment, Explore Korea, where we journey across the peninsula, discovering more about the country's history, culture, and travel highlights. This week, it's the turn of our travel explorer, Hannah Roberts, who joins us online. Hannah, hello, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the show again. Where are you taking us this week?
So today we're going to Danyang County, which is in North Chungcheong Province, and we're going there for some views and some culinary treats.
I see. So the picturesque county of Danyang. Yeah. But Hannah, why Danyang?
So even after a few years living in Korea, I'd never thought about going to Danyang. I hadn't even really heard the name before. But I went there on a suggestion with a few friends a couple of years ago, and it really left an impact on me, so I wanted to share it today. It's the perfect place for people who love, you know, the beautiful views and authentic food experiences, And I think that region really shows off Korea's natural beauty and shows that it's always worth visiting the smaller, lesser known parts of the country.
Right. Well, it sounds like Danyang left quite an impression. So let's get into it then. Where do we start? Where do you suggest we go?
The top of my list for the Danyang area is to visit the Mantongha Skywalk. It's just a short drive from the main town area of Danyang, right where the KTX train station is. The skywalk sits on top of a cliff, and if you climb up the skywalk, you'll get an amazing view over the Namhan River, which is the second longest river in Korea and a tributary of the Han River that flows through Seoul. And you can see the river and the surrounding mountains from the top of the skywalk there. So South Korea's terrain, as most people probably know, is famously around 70% mountains. But the county of Danyang is over 83% mountainous, making for absolutely stunning views on a clear day.
Right, especially as the skywalk takes you up quite high as well, right?
It does, yeah. So if you're a bit of a scaredy cat like me, you might just be happy walking to the top and taking in the view, holding onto the handrail from the center of the structure. But if you're a thrill seeker, you can walk out onto the glass walkway that juts out over the edge of the cliff.
Right,
below.
So you can see below to the ground. So not for those who have a fear of heights then.
No, definitely not. I can say that from first-hand experience. But if that is not enough adrenaline for you, there is also a zip line that can take you down to the bottom of the cliff and take you down over that mountain while looking out over the river unobstructed. Or another option to go down the mountain is to take their alpine coaster, which is a little less exhilarating, but might be a slightly better option for those afraid of heights.
Right.
Once you get to the bottom, there is a walking route back to the town, which takes you along a covered walkway attached to the side of the cliff over the edge of the river. And if you manage to time it to be down there at sunset, it's an absolutely beautiful walk.
Well, that sounds great. How much does it cost to enjoy this skywalk?
So to get into the skywalk, it's pretty cheap. It's 3,000 won for adults, which does include the shuttle bus that takes you up to the clifftop. Or you can pay a little bit extra, 2,500 won, and you can get the monorail to the top for a more scenic route. The tickets for the zipline and the alpine coaster can be purchased when you're at the top, and those cost 30,000 won and 15,000 won, respectively. But it should be noted that if you want to do that, there is a weight limit of 92 kilos for the zipline and 100 kilos for the coaster.
Right, that's good to know. Okay, so now that we enjoyed the beautiful scenery of the Namhan River from the skywalk, where do we go next?
We are going to one of the most famous spots in Danyang and one of the county's designated 8 spots of beauty, and that is Dodam Sambong, which are a group of 3 rock formations or peaks rising from the center of a section of the Namhan River. So another beautiful view over the river. Describing it like that, 3 rocks sticking out of the river, probably doesn't sound very impressive. but what draws people there is the folktale that's attached to them. So the story goes that the 3 rocks represent a husband, a wife, and the husband's mistress. When the wife couldn't give her husband a son, he took a mistress to bear him an heir. And the wife, in anger, turned away and distanced herself from him. So if you look at the rocks, you can see the biggest rock is supposed to be the husband, the smallest is the mistress, and the medium-sized rock that is a little bit further away from the others is meant to be the wife.
Right.
So for another amazing view down the river and over the 3 peaks, there's another climb you can take. You can walk up to a viewpoint on a nearby cliff. But if you'd rather get a closer view of the rocks, you can take a ride on a speedboat that will take you out on the water and around them with a little speed and thrill thrown in for good measure.
Sure. It is a beautiful sight, especially as there's this small pagoda nestling on the husband rock as well.
Oh, yeah.
So it's definitely well worth checking out. Now, there is a saying in Korean, 금강산도 식후경, meaning that even beautiful sights have to be accompanied with good food. And with that in mind, then let's talk about the food in Danyang. What are some local dishes that we should be seeking out while visiting?
So Danyang is actually the country's capital for garlic, thanks to the fact that its highly mountainous terrain makes it hard to grow other produce. And the region is really proud of this, promoting garlic as a health food and even making their bus stops and streetlights in the shape of garlic bulbs, which is quite fun to see when you drive around.
Sure.
The garlic from Danyang is strong and a little bit sweet. And many of the restaurants in the area feature it strongly on their menus and have created unique side dishes around it. You might not think it possible, but chefs in the area even make kimchi from garlic, not just including it, but they literally ferment the individual cloves
right.
in the spicy mixture that you use to make other types of kimchi. So I really recommend trying that one if you can find it while you're there.
Sure. If you spend enough time in Korea, you'll learn that you can make kimchi pretty much out of anything.
Out of anything,
sure.
Yes.
But for Danyang, garlic kimchi. Okay, what
garlic
else?
Kimchi. So another must-try food in Danyang is bokgalbi, which is a beef short rib patty that's been marinated in a sweet sauce and grilled, and then served alongside, of course, a selection of side dishes and eaten with rice. The dish actually doesn't originate in Danyang. In fact, the most famous version nowadays is from the city with a very similar name. It can be quite confusing. Bokgalbi comes from Tamyang,
right.
but Danyang does bokgalbi very well, and the Danyang traditional market is a great place to sit down for a meal of it, as well as somewhere you can try all sorts of other Korean traditional foods as well.
Well, I'm getting hungry again, Hannah. You always do this to me on this segment.
I'm so sorry.
Before we let you go, though, can you also let us know how we get to Danyang?
So it's really easy to get to Danyang from Seoul nowadays. You can take the KTX train directly there from Cheongnyang-ni Station, which will take around 1 hour and 20 minutes and will cost around 20,000 won one way. Or you can take the slow train, which will cost you about a third of the price, and takes 2 hours. If you prefer the bus, a ticket from the Dong Seoul bus terminal, that's the East Seoul bus terminal, will cost around 13,000 won, but it will take you a bit longer, 2.5 hours to get there. If you're driving yourself, it'll take just under 2 hours, but even if you don't take a car to get there, I recommend hiring one to get around the area if it's possible. Because of the mountains and all the best tourist spots there being quite spaced out, it's the most comfortable way to get around, in my opinion.
Sure. So that's Danyang County, a place with some great views and some great food. We'll wrap it up there for Explore Korea this week. Hannah, thank you for that travel recommendation today, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Talk to you next time.
This is Scott Kelly, former NASA astronaut, and you're listening to Korea 24.
We finish up the show, as usual, with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald. And for this, we have our staff editor joining us in the studio once again, Richard Larkin. Richard, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, good to see you too.
Okay, so what do you have for us first?
First, we'll take a look at the business section of the Korea Times. Paek Byung-yeol's article tells us more about the upcoming Seoul E-Prix. For those who don't know, Seoul E-Prix is a racing competition for electric vehicles.
Right, this is perhaps you can call it the smaller cousin of the Formula One, the F1 Grand Prix races. And much like its cousin, it has some exciting tracks and races and cities around the world, but it's coming to Seoul now. What can you tell us about this upcoming event?
Well, it will be the first global EV race to be held in Korea, and it was organized by the International Automobile Federation. Originally, the competition was meant to take place 2 years ago, but it was delayed until this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Seoul E-Prix is a two-day event on August 13th and 14th at Jamsil Sports Complex, and spectators will be able to see cars from global car makers like Mercedes-Benz, Jaguar, and Porsche. People who go to the event can watch the overtaking competition between the drivers, as the circuit will be built on roads around the sports complex. There will be a podium and screens inside the complex, because this will be the final race to decide the winner of the 2021-22 season.
Right, so Korea is hosting the exciting end to the Formula E season,
right.
Then. What else can people look forward to there?
There will also be an e-village. Here, visitors can enjoy many different types of entertainment and will be able to see future concept cars by famous car brands. Spectators can experience so much more, like fan signing events with the drivers, a Pokemon parade, and a Formula E racing simulator. You'll be able to experience what it's like to be a professional driver. The organizers have said that the village will be made out of eco-friendly materials to keep in line with their motto, Race for the Earth.
It sounds like it's going to be a really fun weekend. It's coming up, as we said, next week, August 13th and 14th. Okay, let's move on to our second article. What do you have for us?
The next article will be useful for those who enjoy nature and have been feeling too hot this summer. Kim So-hyun's article can be found in the Weekender section of the Korea Herald. It tells us the best stream valleys near Seoul where people can go to cool off. This list is meant to help families who are not able to travel too far out of the capital, as it can get very busy in beach towns and in the countryside during the summer.
Okay, so the best stream valleys near Seoul. These are very popular sites for Korean people during the summer months because they offer some shade among the trees and the mountainous areas, and the streams are fun for kids to play in, and it's cool as well. So let's take a look at some of the options our listeners can choose from then.
Well, one of the options is a place called Jingwanza Valley. It's about a 10-minute walk from Eumpyeong Hanok Village, but it is also possible to get there by bus, and there is a parking lot. There is a Buddhist temple that was built over 1,000 years ago, right next to the valley, so you can take a look at the historic building before cooling off at the stream. The article explains that taking a trip to Jingwanza Valley is best on a clear day after it has been raining. This way, there will be enough water to dip your whole body at certain parts. But there are warnings not to go there whilst it is raining.
Sure, that's a good safety tip. Okay, what else is on the list?
The next option, according to the article, is a popular destination for college trips in the spring. It is called Uidong Valley, and it is located between Mount Dobong and Mount Pukan. Stepping into the streams is actually barred for safety reasons, but the reason why it is so popular is that there are cafes, restaurants, and B&Bs around the area, so you don't have to travel too far to eat or relax inside. Uidong Valley is also a good place for hikers. That is because there are many scenic mountain trails. It seems like this is a good place to go if you are looking for a nice atmosphere.
Mm.
These are just two examples of places you can go to cool off, but if you want to find out more, you can take a look at the article. I believe there are 11 options altogether.
Right, and there are many more around Korea as well, so right. You don't have to worry about it getting too crowded, as there are really a lot of options, so people can enjoy. We'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for those stories, Richard, and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
And that's where we wrap up our show as well. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. So do join us again for more news, views and reviews from Korea. Till then, we hope you have a great day. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.